Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza, and we're your primary selection team here at Cattle. And guys, this is our 50th episode.
Wow. Whoa.
Can you believe we're still here?
Amazing. No. I wasn't here from the beginning, but I've been there on a lot of those.
You've been here for a lot. Yes, you've both been here for a lot. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We're enjoying this. And we are happy that spring is here.
Yay.
Although
I do have my jacket on right now.
Well, I mean, that's
pretty tempestuous.
That's building issues. That's not the weather necessarily. No, that weather isn't helping. You got to love Michigan. It's all over the place this week.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we're going to celebrate it. We're celebrating spring. We're celebrating the environment. We're going to end Earth Day in this episode. And I mean, I think we should dig right in.
Yeah.
All right.
So what do you got, Cheryl?
Well, I have a book that I was really excited to get and looking forward to reading. And it did not disappoint at all. It's called Bird Brother, A Falconer's Journey and the Healing Power of Wildlife by Rodney Stotts. And Rodney Stotts grew up in Washington, D.C. as a young child. He visited the Smithsonian National Zoo. And what captivated him the most were the birds of prey. And as an adult, he was selling drugs, and he decided to get a sideline job to work with the Earth Conservation Corps. It was just a job. He said, okay, I'll do this, make some extra money, that sort of thing. So he ended up working to clean up the Anacostia River, which was absolutely clogged, filthy with trash. Mm-hmm. And they did trash cleanup primarily. They would clean it up, and literally by the next day, it'd be full again. I mean, it was just a very difficult job. They also started, though, reintroducing bald eagles to that region, to the river, successfully. This really captivated him. And so he began this journey to become a master falconer, which completely changed his life. He did end up stopping selling drugs, and he dedicated his entire life to birds of prey. He also has some rescue horses, which, of course, I love. And then also sharing birds of prey with children, with school children and people of all ages. Mm-hmm. He brings them into the street, and he has an organization called Rodney's Raptors, where he brings nature to kids. This is an incredibly moving, powerful, completely inspiring story of the redemptive power of connecting with nature.
Okay, this one's on my list. That one caught my eye early on.
It's just so good.
Wow, that does sound good. So I kind of have a bird-related book, too. My title is Where Have All the Birds Gone? Nature in Crisis, and it is by Rebecca Hirsch. And this is a young adult nonfiction title. It's a fairly compact book. I really liked it, 9 chapters. I learned so much. Something like 40% of all bird species worldwide are shrinking, just mm-hmm. going away. And since the 1970s, something like 30% of all birds have disappeared. This is a book that, like I said, is kind of slim and compact, but it gives, 9 chapters of just different aspects of why the birds have disappeared or are disappearing. The opening chapter started out with this account by a Potawatomi tribal leader who was camping out near the Manistee River, and this is back in 1850. This is his documented account in northern Michigan. He said that he was looking up, and he saw this, just mass of pigeons, like millions of pigeons. It was like you could hear horses or buffalo. It sounded so strong, and there was like a shadow in the sky. And he remembers that. He remembered that very clearly. And as he lived out his life, he just started, to notice that you wouldn't see that anymore. And now those were passenger pigeons, I believe they were called, kind of a small bird, like a mourning dove maybe. They're extinct. They're gone.
Right.
So in some one sense, I found, a lot of the statistics that I was reading about really troubling, but it was also interesting to learn, what some of the causes are. I didn't know this, but I've certainly witnessed it. The leading cause in North America of birds, dying would be crashing into windows, like skyscrapers or even your really nice, clean bay window or something. Like, I had no idea that was a big cause. And then something I've been hearing about and was also in this book was, like, cats. My little Edie's is going out there, maybe. I don't know if she is or not, but domestic cats are really on the prowl for birds and can also contribute pretty strongly towards the decline of birds. So, you know, of course, there's climate change and, you know, poisoned bugs. And, you know, bugs are things that birds eat, and that affects their systems. And it was just a really neat history, but also kind of stat-based sort of look at, you know, why birds are declining. I will say that the last chapter gave a really nice overview of, you know, what are some of the things that you can do to help birds along. Sometimes humans can really help prolong the existence of certain species. And, you know, one of the examples was, like, how, you know, bird feeders and what you put in them, that sort of thing. So it was really, really an interesting presentation. I hope you will consider picking it up.
Sounds really good. There's window clings, too, that you can put on windows so that they don't, it doesn't look so clear.
Yes, like a little decorative window clings. They refer to something in that. I can't remember what they're, some sort of a windmill or something.
Okay.
Something like that. I couldn't picture what they were talking about. But, yeah, there are things you can put on your windows that will get the attention of the birds so they know that that's not a safe place.
And I think it's New York does some sort of, or intentionally, some sort of lights out type of a thing on skyscrapers.
Yes,
it was in one
light
of those books.
Is a big deal.
So they turn it off for a little bit during certain migratory. It was like a movement. I can't remember. It was in a book that we discussed a while back on the podcast, actually.
Both of these make me think about the, I mean, birds are just so interesting. The peregrine falcons on the MSU stadium.
Yeah.
It's just a really neat. There's, if you're not aware, there's a cam where you can watch.
Yeah.
And they have laid. They are nesting.
Awesome.
There's an egg. But yeah, it's so interesting. So my book kind of jumps off of that sort of feeling of we are involved in what's going on with, well, all these species. It's called Dear Little One by Nina Layden. The artist is Melissa Castrolon. It's just a really lovely picture book. It's a letter and a blessing in verse to young readers from Mother Nature. And it's encouraging them to explore and appreciate the earth and its flora, its fauna, the environment that creates it, the moon and the stars and the sun and the sky. And it's just a pretty beautiful book. It notes, care for this world, it will be a friend to you and be there for your children and their children too. And this, it's just a gorgeous book. I really like line art and shading that fills the page. And this is just a really colorful, beautiful story. That, I mean, the pictures are of mostly following a little girl who is exploring the world. And so it's very, I just enjoy it. And I think everybody should take a look.
Yeah, okay. Jessica showed that to me before the podcast, and it almost has a little bit of that. It's not Where's Waldo at all, but there's so much in the pictures that it'd be really fun for kids to find things in it. Little sea creatures and...
Yes, very much.
A lot of detail.
Cool. Well, I also have a couple of picture books. The one that I want to mention is... it's called One Earth by Eileen Spinelli. I love the Spinellis as authors, and this is a really, it's a short book, it's a picture book, and it's kind of like a counting book in that it starts out like one or five clumps of flowers, six turtles snoozing, but when you get to 10, it starts to count back, and that's when it sort of gives you the idea of, like, let's celebrate the earth, let's realize what we can do to preserve our earth. We only have one earth. So 10 scraps of litter, toss them in the trash. 9 empty bottles, turn them in for cash. I really like that. You know, they talk about plastic grocery bags, flannel shirts, and something that I've been thinking about quite a bit is four pairs of socks with holes you can learn to sew. I do sew some of my holy socks, not as many as I need to. I really like the book because it gives you really practical ideas for ways to be thinking about, you know, what we can do to reuse and recycle the things that we have and not sense so much that we need to go out and get something new or just throw it out, you know. So it was really, really nice book. And it is illustrated by Rogério, I want to say Coelho. He's a Brazilian illustrator.
Really quite neat. I'm seeing them from across
really,
the room.
And really, really nice book. Neat art. And like I said, the first few pages, you know, you think it's just another counting book, but it does give a really strong message of, hey, let's try to think about what we can do to reuse, because we really do. We just have one Earth. We have one Lake Michigan, one moon, one sun. So one. That's it. Sorry.
Oh, it sounds great. I think it feeds nicely into the next book that I have, which is from Seed to Dust, Life, Nature, and a Country Garden by Mark Hammer. And Mark Hammer wrote a book with a really quirky title called How to Catch a Mole that became very popular a number of years ago. And this is his second work. And this is a tricky book because it looks very garden-y. And it looks like it is really the story of he's a caretaker in Wales of a woman's garden. Her name is Mrs. Cashmere. She's towards the end of her life, and he has had decades tending to her garden. That's his career, that's his work year round, tending to this garden that he loves. So it feels like a garden book. There are birds, there's nature. Every essay starts with something that he's doing in the garden. But it really becomes a meditation about life. It's very philosophical. Mark Hammer is a poet. At one point, he was homeless. He worked for the railroads. He's had a very full and rich life, and it's really meditation on what it means to be a human, what it means to have a livelihood for the, you know, the love of his wife is very features prominently in the story, his children, and just becomes a very sort of Zen philosophical work that would appeal to gardeners, nature lovers, and people who love poetry, and just thinking about aging and life and the whole life cycle and what it means to live a successful life, but really what it means to just be. And so just a really lovely work, From Seed to Dust, Mark Hammer.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Then I also go totally in the other direction into, I love this time of year to check out huge stacks of garden books for inspiration for my little condo garden. And why this one really appeals to me, it ties into that. It's Complete Container Herb Gardening, Design and Grow Beautiful, Bountiful Herb-Filled Pots by Sue Goetz. And why I like this one so much is it's containers. So you can put this on an apartment balcony, an apartment right outside the door. You could put them in your garden, but it also gives you ideas for certain gardens, like a flavorful herb tea garden for growing your own herbs for tea, one for growing herbs for cleaning supplies, natural cleaning supplies in your house. There's one that's purely a lemon pot, all different types of lemony herbs.
Yeah,
so it's just really fun. I read a lot of garden books, but this one really stood out to me. It's accessible. Anybody can have one pot. And she walks you through that whole process of potting soil and gives you a lot of really cool ideas. Cool. It's just a really fun book.
So I do have one other one, too. This one is Reuse This Book. And something you just said reminded me of what's in here. So this is one of these. It looks like a board book. It's in our picture book section. And at the top, I don't know if this is a subtitle or not, but it says Tilt, Shake, Tap. The Planet Needs You. And this is actually, you know, I can't remember the exact term, but I think it's one of those interactive books. Mm-hmm. There's kind of a little sub-movement. Sometimes you notice books telling kids what to do. Okay, now pick up the book and shake it up. You know, and kids love these sorts of books. This is a really great title because it gives you, a little circle your finger around the globe. So there's a picture of the Earth there. Everyone you love lives here. So each spread is pointing towards some aspect of Earth, of dirt, of, you know, flowers, bees, things that you can do. And one of the ones that I really liked. It says, tilt the book three times to water your garden, so you can play with your child or with the reader, can do that. And what I really liked is if you water your plants early in the morning when it is cooler, your garden will stay refreshed for the rest of the day. It's just a beautiful spread of just little tips. I think reading it repeatedly like just really helps both adults and kids, you know, get the idea that we can really take care of our gardens, our land and our backyard. Composting is mm-hmm. mentioned in the book as well. So it's been a nice read, so, and very colorful. There is no author that I can tell reuse this book, and it is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt.
Okay, very cool. Okay, I have two last ones, and you got to bear with me. They're related, but as I am often bringing different titles to the equation, one of them is a little bit of a stretch, but it makes sense when you get there. So the first book that I wanted to talk about is a children's nonfiction book called Whale Fall Cafe. This is by Jackie Sewell and then illustrated by Dan Tavis. Now, Jackie was actually a local children's librarian and could be seen subbing at our Capital Area District Library branches for years. But she has researched and written this nonfiction book for children, and it is... really kind of walking you through the ecosystem around the death of a whale. Mm. So when a whale dies, and we want, if a whale is going to die, we want it to die in the ocean, not beached, because it literally is feeding an ecosystem for 1,000+ years.
Wow.
A mid-sized whale can actually keep an ecosystem going for 1,000+ years, largely without human it's causing problems. But, you know, if the system is allowed to go the way it is meant to. So in this particular book, you have a narrator who is Dr. Fish, who has a submersible because he's not a fish that actually can go into the depths of the ocean. So he's walking the reader through as the whale is sinking, and it walks through from the things that we think of, you know, obviously, you know, if it's high enough, sharks are probably going to take some bites, but as it's going, but it works its way down to the microscopic and the bacteria that are actually feeding and a lot of really fascinating, the things that you just don't, unless you're really into the sea, you don't know about some of these strange and interesting creatures that live there.
Right.
So it walks through some of those that this wasn't even a science that people studied prior to like 1987. They hadn't been able to get a submersible down low enough to see a whale fall and to understand that there's this huge giant ecosystem around this. And they don't know all the creatures yet. I mean, it's still something that's being studied. And it's just really interesting to think about everything and all these creatures that we've only discovered as this is, you know, as you've been able to observe this now.
Right.
So it's just
so cool how we're so interconnected and how
that's exactly it.
And it's just so reliant on each other, on all of us, really.
And thus so fragile when one piece gets destroyed by chemicals or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. And when you think, I mean, it goes from sharks down to there are anemone, you know, crustaceans that are living off 1,000-year-old bones. And you think about, you know, So it's a very neat book. There's a fair amount of notes at the end. She worked specifically with a particular institute that with some specialists that, and she talks about them. And so there's a fair amount of notes to work with, and a lot of. There's so much I would like to know more if I had more time to kind of look into those animals. And so it's an interesting and fun, and it's done in sort of a quirky, funny way, because you are talking about essentially a dead body, but and it's treated like, you know, the first feeding at the Whale Cafe is the sharks, and the next feeding, the next serving, the next night, the next thing being plated is for this group of scavengers, and it's an interesting story. Okay. Now, bear with me, because now I'm going to jump to the second book, which is actually The Kaiju Preservation Society by John Scalzi. It is a new science fiction book. It is not the COVID. It's not the book he was supposed to be writing in COVID during COVID, but it is the book that came out. but in it, it's a. So the main character, Jamie Gray, gets fired during the pandemic, and ends up working in food delivery, which, you know, everybody's favorite, not favorite, pandemic, last ditch job, basically. And he happens to deliver to a person that kind of he knew vaguely in college, and who remembered him. Was aware he was a he was working on a doctorate. His doctoral dissertation was on science fiction, so and the guy had read it, and it was sort of like, so they knew each other vaguely. But the guy knows he's even being fired from his delivery job shortly. But the guy's desperately looking to fill out a team for his super secret NGO, the KPS. And Jamie's desperate. So Jamie takes the job, and slowly finds out what he's working for, which is the Kaiju Preservation Society. If you're familiar with the term Kaiju, yes, we're thinking Godzilla. The creatures they're preserving are not exactly Godzilla, but they certainly inspired that idea of Godzilla. And he is basically taken to a parallel Earth. And on that Earth, there is the Kaiju are something that give us the impression of Godzilla, what we think of Godzilla. But it's such a highly developed, intertwined ecosystem. We've got I don't want to say monsters because they're not monsters, but the monster-like things, and then everything that lives in and around them. And Scalzi does a really nice job for me of, I mean, I immediately thought of Whalefall when it's like, or any other kind of, you know, very tight environment. But in this particular case, very early on, a kaiju dies and you get that really interesting parallel to Whalefall in terms of everything that's helped by the death of a kaiju.
Wow.
Even though you don't want to see that happen. There is it's part of their environment and it's part of that ecosystem, and so it just immediately actually made me think of Jackie's book when I was reading it. So this is if you're at all familiar with Red Shirts by Scalzi or anything by Max Brooks, who what wrote World War Z and Devolution, I'm sorry, what's his father's name? He just wrote his Hollywood Royalty. He just wrote his autobiography. Mel Brooks. He's Mel Brooks' son.
Really?
And that comes through. or even Martha Wells, who I've talked about before, and her
Murderbot
series. Yes, thank you. but it's funny. But it's a fast-paced smart sci-fi novel. But it did. The ecosystem is quite interesting. And it is a study of the ecosystem. I mean, part of what they're doing is trying to protect the creatures. And part of it is studying the ecosystem and really looking into kind of this world that is, you know, developed without human influence that they are now kind of studying in. So it's a fun new book that's out there.
Yeah. That does sound really interesting.
I mean, it's
not being a big science fiction
actually,
person, but
it's
like,
a very surprisingly accessible science. Scalzi is actually, if you don't like science fiction, I would totally suggest Scalzi.
Sure, okay.
It's just really accessible. And he talks about how things kind of don't make any sense and things, you know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't when you're talking. I mean, the character is someone who is studying science fiction and those quirks of it and what works and doesn't work. So.
You did a great job describing it. You got me a little mildly curious and I might be hooked to go check it out.
It's a fairly quick read, too.
Yeah.
That's what we got this time?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
This has been fun.
Right. Yes, it has.
Happy spring.
Happy spring. Happy April.
Yeah.
Happy Earth Day.
See you next time.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
See ya.
Bye.